You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
What you really want inside. your life.
Running like a red disease.
Running like a red disease. Ghetto people.
Stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, yo. You got to learn to love yourself. Yeah. Ghetto people.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we review the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa.
I mentioned this call Kemet may be recorded or transcribed.
Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Baba Oshi. Hotel family, hope everything was well for you. Hope you had a great weekend. Had a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And hope the weather was accommodating, but of course it was probably not. Especially if you were in Buffalo. I got to call my brother Mike Brown, man. See how he's doing, man. Woo. Man. Lake effect snow, right? Yeah. But all throughout the, you know, it's climate change is real. You know, here it is. You're getting some deep Arctic air. You know, it's not even winter yet. Winter doesn't happen till the 22nd, supposedly. But it's about terrible weather for a longer period of time. The weather patterns are, yeah. Anyway, this is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. That's timeforanawakening.com. Top of the page, you'll see podcast programs. Click on that. The drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. The first one, African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. Thanks to my good brother, Brother Kwaku, and brothers and sisters, brother, thank you for your prayers, because Brother Kwaku is doing good, man. He's doing better. He sounds good. He's getting around a lot better, man. So let's pray and hope that that continues for my good brother, Brother Kwaku. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening, besides this program, which is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m., all times are going to give it Eastern times. We have Monday and Wednesday from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Our Story with Baba Wes Johnson from New Orleans. Our Story. Monday and Wednesday, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Baba Wes Johnson. And then on Fridays, Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, and that's at 8 p.m. Fridays, 8 p.m. You know, I don't know if Brother Elliot and them do a program on Friday or a show on Fridays. Because he plays 24/7. If you go to Time for an Awakening, you'll hear, except for right now. If you go to timeforanawakening.com, you'll hear me. You know, and if you click on the button, you'll hear me. But if it's outside of me, then you hear Brother Elliot and used to play some others. I don't know if he ever played my program in that mix, but if he did, cool. If he didn't, cool too. But, yeah. And so, I'm not sure if he does that on Fridays, but I know he does it on Sundays. No, he does it on Sundays. And there's another program that comes on Sundays before him from 5 to 6, and he's on from 7 until. So from 5 to 6, Pinckney to Pinckney, activist Reverend Edward Pinckney out of Benton Harbor, Michigan. His program is happening from 5 to 6 on Sunday. And then from 7 o'clock on Sunday, Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And, of course, the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Also, too, still, if you, whatever search engine you use, put in the search babaoshi.net, and you'll still come up with the programs that are dated and titled.
Just go to babaoshi.net, whatever search engine you use. BABAOSHI.net. All right. Ah, yeah. Another program. We Buy Black. We Buy Black, the largest online marketplace for American African-owned businesses is WeBuyBlack.com. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses, WeBuyBlack.com. And, of course, the holiday time is coming up. Brothers and sisters, I will continue to say, I will continue to promote Ujamaa Cooperative Economics for this month, for this holiday month. Try, if you can, brothers and sisters, to spend some money with us, with American African-owned businesses, for gifts or whatever it is, okay? We Buy Black. Get everything you need from American African-owned businesses. WeBuyBlack.com. Africa for the Africans. Brother Womani Tayemba is returning today, December 2nd, from his trip in Kemet. That's right. The trip was November 20th to December 2nd to Kemet. His next trip is January 30th to February 10th. January 30th to November 10th, 2025. Going to Azania. Then the next trip is April 4th through the 14th, 2025, Kenya. And then May 24th to June 5th, 2025, Ghana. November 20th to December 1st, Tanzania. And those are the trips that he has planning upcoming. But, of course, if you go to his website, and there's all kinds of things there for you to check out, not just the information on the trips that he's providing, but also, too, if you are planning to go out of the country, the information that is necessary for you to do that is on the website. So all the forms and fees and shots and all of that good stuff is all of that. All of the shots. That's good stuff. Well, hey, you know, you got to take some of those vaccinations. Some people say, I don't take no vaccinations. But if you go to Africa, you got to take some vaccinations. Yeah, for real. Okay. Africa for the Africans. If you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos of previous tours, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007. Africa. For the Africans.org. Habashaw. That's right. Habashaw is helping Africa by establishing schools at home and abroad. In the programs of Habashaw, excuse me, family. Habashaw Works Program. And Habashaw is based here in Atlanta. Good brothers and sisters. And they have Black to Our Roots, Golden Growers, Sustainable Seeds, and Urban Green Jobs. And of course, the Kashi Project in Ghana. The beautiful building that they have. And so, brothers and sisters, Habashaw Incorporated.org, helping Africa by establishing schools at home and abroad. Ledge Group, land for the environmental group economics. And that's right, Ledge, land for the environmental development for group economics. Ledge has 12 projects in 6 different countries and over 170 employees and over 260 members. Become a member of the Ledge Group. They deal in the area of human necessity, human essentials, which is food, water, clothing, and shelter, providing these things for brothers and sisters throughout Africa and the diaspora. Ledge, land for the environmental development for group economics. Brother Nathaniel Jordan, from my understanding, I talked to Brother Ayo, and of course, Brother Ayo will be here next Saturday. Brother Ayo Kamathi will be here next Saturday, not this Saturday, the following Saturday, 15th, at the Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore. There's also planning for him to be at the New Black Wall Street, but we'll get that straight. And so, next Saturday, but Brother Nathaniel Jordan and the Wellness is the Minister of Wellness.com. Go to the Minister of Wellness.com. A lot of good things on his website still. And he'll be back. He'll be back soon. And I can't wait to get a chance to talk with him. Smy Pharmacy. SMAIFARMACY. Smy Pharmacy. Brother Jabril. Give Brother Jabril a call at 770-765-7751. That's 770-765-7751. Smile Pharmacy. Or you can write a give him an email at Smile Pharmacy, SMAIFARMACY, at gmail.com. The Moses West Foundation website is having some repairs. And so we're not going to, but we'll always talk about going to the MosesWestFoundation.org. Because what Brother Moses West is doing is something that all of us should truly support in some form or fashion. So the MosesWestFoundation.org. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar, located here in Atlanta in the West End, right here on Ralph David Abernathy Boulevard. And they have delicious smoothies, fruit drinks, and dry goods, and they serve vegan dishes on Saturday and Sunday. If you want to give them a call, give them a call at 404-444-1635. That's 404-444-1635. Wadada's Healthy Market and Juice Bar. Mama Nia. That's right, brothers and sisters. The holiday season is coming. Kwanzaa, you know, all the other ones. Go to Mama Nia. Buy some books for the kids. Give them a book. You know, one gift and a nice little wrapper. Open up and a nice book. Man, give them a book. Better is a book than a well-built house. Better is a book than a memorial plaque in the temple, because what is written is for eternity. A book. So Medu Bookstore at the Greenbrier Mall. Give Mama Nia a call at 404-346-3263. That's 404-346-3263. Featuring, she's got fine selection of books, postcards, greeting cards, T-shirts, figurines, and, man, all kind of good stuff. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. The other bookstore we promote is the Black Dot. Of course, we're going to be there next Saturday with Brother Ayu Kamathi, the Irritated Genie. And that's Brother Gazimde Ajamu. The Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore and Coffee Bar, located in Lithonia, which is, of course, east of here, you know. And the other place we promote, of course, is the New Black Wall Street. It was also east of here. So if you would jump in your ride and you would go east on I-20, you would exit 74. Main Street in Lithonia, make a left. Once you exit, make a left, and then now you're headed in the north direction. Headed north in the north direction, and about a mile and a half is the Black Dot Cultural Center Bookstore and Coffee Bar. Check out my good brother, Brother Gazimde Ajamu, or give him a call at 770-305-6373. That's 770-305-6373. And give him a call, and of course, jump back in your ride, head back the other direction. Now you're headed south. And once again, take a left onto I-20. The next exit is exit 75. Turner Hill Road, make a right and three lights. One, two, three lights. Make another right, and on the left will be the New Black Wall Street Market. The New Black Wall Street Market, where you can check out my good brother from Afroletics. He's got athletic wear with an African theme. That's right, the Zulus, the Dogons. Oh, man, it's got all kind of stuff. It's good. The Moors, the Omics. Yeah. Afroletics. Us Lifting Us. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. They have their Thursday night broadcast every Thursday night from 9 to 10. On Blog Talk Radio, that's blogtalkradio.com/ULU, Us Lifting Us. Or give them a call at 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. Us Lifting Us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. I'm sorry, family. Homeland Village and Cultural Gift Shop, Brother Bija in Macon, Georgia, 2910 Napier Avenue in Macon, Georgia, to be exact. His phone number is 478-256-1166, 256-1166. Get Brother BJ a call. He's closed today. Open from Tuesday through Sunday at 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. Tuesday through Sunday in Macon, Georgia. He has everything, brothers. Check out Brother BJ, Homeland Village and Cultural Gift Shop in Macon, Georgia. Yeah. Sun God Essential, one-stop natural shop located in 4140 Jonesboro Road in Forest Park, Georgia. Inside the International Discount Mall, booth 225. Give my good sister Shelly Amundsen a call at 404-434-7963. That's 404-434-7963. Sun God Essence, your one-stop natural shop. Sanjay Dash Haiti, Sister Gabriella Aurelia. She sent me an email the other day showing out the children how they're doing. Sanjay, S-O-N-J-E dash I-E-T, A-Y-I-T-I dot org. Sanjay dash I-E-T dot org. Go online and see for yourself. And I'm saying for you to do that. So, hey, man, you might, you know, want to support the brothers and sisters. You know, that's what you should do. That's why I do this. So we can get some support. Akabin Institute, Baba Baruti, Mama Ya, all the great work that they're doing, support them. Akabin Institute. If you want to use PayPal, go to yabaruti at yahoo.com. If you want to use Cash App, $ Yah, Y-A-A, the letter M, then Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I, and you can support them that way. Also, too, he's a prolific writer. Go to Akabin House, akabinhouse.com. And you can check out the many books that Baba Rudy has produced and continues to produce. And two is a two-volume set that I use every day that I'm on this program. And I often reach back because sometimes I'm gone for a spell or for an extent. And I reach back to some previous ones or ones that I've missed because this is deep wisdom. Great insights, great quotes from various people. Some who have gone on to be with ancestors, and some are contemporaries, you know, great quotes. And then, of course, Baba Baruti's narratives, outstanding. Check this one out. December 1st, you cannot make yourself whole again by brooding 100% of the time on the darkness of the world. We are the light of the world. Dr. Ivan von Cernima. Beyond Urugu, attempting to rewrite our truth so that the enslavement and colonization of African people never happened is a socialized nature of the menticidal, especially true Negroes. Their lives are so self-hatingly empty and full of despair in terms of wanting to be seen, having to be some kind of royalty and a chronic desire to have a glowing history in order to compete with beings that are nothing to compete with, that they are driven to find something African to disturb and destroy in service to their pale deities. Many even carrying our colors with clenched fists high in the air, spending every waking moment incessantly searching to convince their intellectually battered following that anything African which will teach us what actually brought us to this narrative in our story, anything which will guide us so that we can better do the mindful work of moving towards sovereignty in the real world, is imaginary. Because they weak. They weak. They pathetic. Affirm, I am shining and doing it brilliantly. I shake. You know, I often say, you know, and I'm definitely against, you know, we're our own worst enemies. I put the blame where it squarely belongs, on Urugu. Yes, they have these minions. They have these Negroes. But the blame belongs on them. Yes, I understand some people's minds are so weak, they willfully do it. They love to mimic and destroy us, yes. Our own people, yes, I understand that. But the blame belongs the root cause. December 2nd, we must develop revolutionary African institutions and be ready to defend them with our lives. We have no choice. Paul Neal. A majority of the operations we engage in, which are described as revolutionary, are overt. The majority of Yorugus are covert. In the same way as our ancestors warned us that by the time the fool has learned the game, the players have dispersed. They see us coming, and we foolishly see them going. This discrepancy must be corrected if sovereignty is to ever again be a possibility for African people. We have to stop mentalizingly pretending that what they control belongs to us also, and for this wrong-headed reason is subject to any meaningful influence by us. We must stop dysfunctionally reacting and start constructively acting. We must recognize that action is a function of preparedness. Those who act are cognizant of the past behaviors and based on that position themselves so as to not be surprised or harmed by similar behaviors in the future. Reactions are based on ignoring what has already occurred, then responding to each reoccurrence as if it is something new. Let me read that again. Reactions are based on ignoring what has already occurred and then responding to each reoccurrence as if it's something new. Specifically, warriors act to prevent the further destruction of African people. Specifically, warriors act to prevent the further destruction of our people. They study the patterns in thought and behavior of our enemies and consider all possible ways in which they can stop the onslaught. They act before the next attack. Having learned from our mistakes and how enemies move, they supplant overt behaviors and move with more covert ones. On the other hand, vanquished individuals do nothing to prevent their destruction, and in fact, by repeatedly doing nothing, continue to invite it. They approach each new genocidal event as if there had been no previous attacks. Oh, how sad. Oh, how pathetic. Affirm, I'm developing and defending active revolutionary action institutes. I am developing and defending active revolutionary African institutes. The Inya Sesim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Ashe. Ashe, family. Yeah. Yeah, family. What are we going to do? Yeah, what are we going to do? We're going to do something. Because if I have to do nothing, it's just is setting us up for the okie doke. Yep. The death. Okay, let's see what here. What are we going to do first? Mm-hmm. Kwame Nkrumah. You know, read this one first. Where am I at here? 21. This is Brother Ezra Erahone, the Sovereign Psyche. This is his piece that he sent out. There is no other historical instance of a formerly enslaved people who valued integration with their former captors to the point where they completely abandoned the superior wealth of their own homeland. They were so overwhelmed by Urugu, so overwhelmed by the colonizer, so overwhelmed by these crackers that they abandoned. They're superior. They abandon it. There's no other historical instance of a formerly enslaved people who valued integration with their former captors to the point where they completely abandoned the superior wealth of their own homeland. And that's so deep because it is. Everybody wants it, but your ass. And I ain't just ain't talking about the Africans on the continent. I'm talking about Africans in the diaspora, specifically the American Africans. And after what you have just witnessed with this bullshit ass election, your preparations to get the hell up out of here should be now. Oh, okay. Let me go to the next one. Yeah, man. You know? Yeah, okay, here we go, family. Yeah, here we go. I've got a bunch of stuff in my, but these are things that I've kept. Kwame Nkrumah said this, you know, Ghana was the first country to gain its independence in, you know, 1957. And this was the speech of freedom that he gave in 1961, a few years after. 1961, he said, "I believe strongly and sincerely that with the deep-rooted wisdom and dignity, the innate respect for human lives, the intense humanity that is our heritage, the African culture, united under one federal government, will emerge not just as another world bloc to flaunt its wealth and strength, but as a great power whose greatness is indestructible because it is built not on fear, envy, or superstition, nor won at the expense of others, but founded on the hope, trust, and friendship, and directed to the good of all mankind." Kwame Nkrumah. A few years later, he said this: "If we do not approach the problems in Africa with a common front and a common purpose, we shall be haggling and wrangling among ourselves until we are once again colonized and become the trolls of a far greater colonialism than we had suffered heretofore." And I tell you, it angers me when I read that, because that's what happened. That's how true that was when he said it. It happened, and that's what happened. And as African people, we allowed that to happen. We didn't have to let that happen. We allowed it to happen. I know the underhand. It's like Mr. Louis Farrakhan says, who is the hidden hand? Really wasn't hidden, but it was Urugu who was guiding that situation. Because why? He wanted you to go to France to go to school. He wanted you to go to England to go to school. You know, he wanted you to go to Spain and Germany to go to school, and to the United States to go, so you could be well trained by them, for them. No, you don't see unity. You don't see bringing together one group of people and another group. No. You exacerbate, or at least they have, those divisions. Yeah. Yeah, that's all I'm saying. Yeah. So. Okay. So I'm going back and forth with this here. Okay, here we go. This is Macaulay, Lord Macaulay. It's addressed to the British Parliament, February 2nd of 1835, when right before the colonization began to happen. on the continent of Africa. We had already been stolen, many of us. You know, they didn't look at the colonization and the raping of the land and the resources, which what made Europe, because Europe has no resources. When you look at Europe, when you look at Britain and you see the gold carriage and you see all the gold they have, when you see them, like one time I seen an ugly ass heifer in a vault with all this gold around her. All of it stolen. The goddamn jewels on the ground. Everything they had is stolen. Is stolen. I'm going to have a good day today, aren't I? He said, I have traveled across the length and breadth of Africa, and I have not seen one person who is a beggar, who is a thief. Such wealth I have seen in this country, such high moral values, people of such caliber, that I do not think that we could ever conquer this country unless we break the very backbone of this nation, which is our spiritual and cultural heritage. Spiritual and cultural heritage. And therefore, I propose that we replace her old and ancient education system, her culture. For if the Africans think that all that is foreign in English is good and greater than their own, they will lose their self-esteem, their native culture, and they will become what we want them to be, a truly dominated nation. That's why in the plan, before they even brought the guns, they brought the missionaries and gave us, and just like Jomo Kenyatta, I believe he's on the first that probably said, maybe, I don't know. They gave us the book. We closed our eyes. They gave us the book. We opened our eyes, and we had the land. We opened our eyes. They had the land. We had the book. And it does us no good. It does us no good. It's a book of falsehoods. Just keeping it real. Falsehoods. Man. Okay. We're approaching it right now. Let me read this right quick, brothers and sisters. Because we use the word Urugu. And this is who Urugu is. It comes out of a saying. Mama Marimba posted this. Mama Marimba posted this. She says, Amun, the God, the creator, ordained that all created beings should be living manifestations of the fundamental universal principle of complementarity. Man and woman, your twin, the complementarity. But in one of these primordial placentas, the male soul did not wait for the full gestation period to be born. This male being arrogantly wished to compete with Amun and to create a world and to create a world better than that which Amun had created. Realizing that he was flawed and therefore deficient, Urugu turned to Amun, seeking his complementarity female self. But Amun had given his female soul away. Urugu, forever incomplete, was doomed to perpetually search for the completeness that could never be his. Urugu, the incomplete being. That's a Urugu. That isn't that how they act? Man, my voice. I apologize. I'll try to correct that by the time we get back. That's how. Isn't that how they act? Arrogant. Don't even like their species have, do they? Cause look how they evolved in that ice box. I love Dr. Shiganda Japa. I was going to play Japa. I came upon a nice piece, about a half hour piece, where Japa is speaking. Of course, he's spoken in French, maybe another African language, maybe Wolof, I'm not sure, because he's from Senegal. And then there's a person interpreting. But it's a good piece on Kemet, its development, and Africans, and so forth. It's a very good piece. Dr. Shiganda Japa was a brilliant man. We've had, last century, we had two men I would say were outstanding in their Du Bois. Du Bois is flawed because of his, you know, his love for Urugu at one time, because he believed that what they have is what we should have and should be seeing equality and so forth, you know, until the time that he realized it wasn't going to happen and he moved to Africa. Du Bois is, and I've been to his center in Ghana. He moved to Africa. And his tomb is at the African Center in Accra, you know. But, you know, he attacked Booker T. Washington in their discussions, and Booker T. said, just, hey, right where we are, just lay down your bucket and let's do some work here. Don't rely on nobody but each other. Du Bois was like, no, man, it's a talented tenth. You know, that's 10% of us who can read and do well and this and so forth. Not understanding and knowing that these mugs are going to be some traitors. And then, of course, Marcus Garvey. And so for many of us, myself, it's hard to reconcile what he did to Marcus Garvey and give him a play now. That was dog about Du Bois. But still a brilliant man, first brother to get a doctorate degree from Harvard University, as if that's a big goddamn deal. But then again, Carter G. Woodson was the second. But Carter G. Woodson was a man of us. Carter G. Woodson started the History Month. Carter G. Woodson, as far as I'm concerned, is loved. Interesting about Carter G. Woodson, there's pictures of him as a young man and older. And not one picture. If you find a picture of Carter G. Woodson smiling, please come on the program and tell me and send it to me. If you find a picture of Carter G. Woodson smiling, and he didn't smile. And I thought, you know, maybe he has a whack smile, you know, some messed up teeth or something like that, you know what I'm saying? But then I understood and realized ain't nothing to smile about. What he was trying to do, he understood this is nothing to smile about. When you destroy people's history, land, and culture, when you destroy their image, yeah, ain't nothing to smile about. Carter G. Woodson. And so, Kwame Nkrumah, let me read to you what Marimba, who gave us that quote on Urugu, said. To be truly liberated, African people must come to know the nature of Urugu's thought and behavior. The nature of Urugu's thought and behavior in order to understand the effect that the Urugu has on our ability to think victoriously. We must be able to separate our thoughts from theirs so that to visualize a future that is not dominated by Europeans, not dominated by Urugu. This is demanded by an African-centered view, because why? We are African. And because the future towards which Urugu leads us is genocide. Mama Marimba, is genocide. Yeah. Yeah. We're going to talk today, and I haven't done this in quite a while, and I hope that you'll understand and join in the conversation. We're about to go to a break in about 10 minutes. But we're going to talk today about racism. And really, we need to do that because why? What you had witnessed in this election of Donald J. Trump and his cabinet picks and all the other things is overtly racist, sexist, xenophobic. What you have witnessed. And he has been that. He is who he is. It's not something that was developing. No, he was that in 2016. He was that in 1920. He was that in 1980, 90, whatever. He is who he is. And so I came up with this idea of functional definitions of racism a long time ago. This is what I used to teach to the young people I worked with back in Milwaukee at these schools that when I was on the fire department, you know. Functional, because we have to understand what racism is. Race is not a real concept. It's not a biological concept. It is a human construct. What that means is that we just came up with it. It's not true biologically. You know, race. There's no such thing as race. There's the human race, of which African people are the fathers and mothers of. But what the real deal is cultures. Cultures. That's why I emphasized that last piece, you know, cultures. A belief that human races have distinctive characteristics that determine their respective cultures, usually involving the idea that one's own race is superior and has the right to rule over others. That's from Webster's Unabridged Dictionary. The idea of race. And that's what the Europeans did. Johann Blumenbach, Carol Linnaeus. There's another name I just saw thrown in there who originated this concept of race. Giving themselves the top position with everybody else at a lower position with us at the lowest position. And the world bought into it. That's why to this very day, at this very moment, to be melanated, dark skin, deep, you are despised, you are shunned, you are relegated to the low end of the human ladder or the social economic ladder. Go to a country where there are darkly or there are melanated people and see how they live amongst the other people. In Southeast Asia, where there's a lot of melanated people. In South America, Central America, this country, wherever, even on the continent, race. There's no such thing as it. But yet, it defines how people are treated. It defines how people can elevate them or not to elevate themselves because of race. Mm-hmm. A functional definition of racism could be, this is Bobby Wright, and I love Bobby Wright. Dr. Bobby Wright, clinical psychologist out of Chicago at the Garfield Park Mental Health Institute, later to be named in his honor. Was a social theorist, outstanding. In fact, if you can find and call somebody or call the bookstore, if you got one, or I don't know, maybe Amazon, I don't know, but get it. The Psychopathic Racial Personality. Dr. Bobby Wright's book, yeah. Of course, he coined the term menticide, and you hear that all the time, particularly in Baba Baruti's writings. Bobby Wright coined that term, menticide. A functional definition of racism could be the oppression and exploitation of a people because of their race. Using this definition, it is very clear that at this point in time, blacks cannot be racist because of their lack of power to oppress anybody. Caucasians, Indians, Chinese, etc. If you use that functional definition, we can't be racist. I always say that. We can be mean-spirited, we can be bigoted, but we can't be racist. Because we can't determine if Caucasians can move here, go to this school, get this job, get elevated and so forth, or anybody else. Or anybody else. Look at our neighborhood. I don't know if you could, is there a solidly strong Asian community? Let's just deal with this country. In this country, let's say that. If you can take your ass and your business, whatever it is, it's a restaurant or whatever kind of business it is, and establish that business in that very solid Asian community and expect them to purchase what you're selling, to purchase your merchandise and your goods. But they do it all the time. Asians in our community, Arabs in our community, dominating the Koreans, dominating the hair care business in our community, all of the service stations. There is not a service station, convenience store in the city of Atlanta that is American African owned. Not damn it, one. And if I'm wrong, please, family, everything, if I say something and I'm wrong, rescue me if I'm wrong. Rescue me. Say, no, Brother Oshi, it is. It's down in here. That's American African-owned station right there. I remember about 5 or 6 years ago, there was a nice-looking couple, but it wasn't in Atlanta. Yeah, it probably is considered because it was one of the counties, and I think it was Cobb County. I'm not sure that they had a one place, service station convenience store. But no, not one. Not one. In Atlanta, we don't have a supermarket. I remember when I first moved here, Wayfields. And I go in there because they got all this pork and shit. So I said, look, this must be us. They got feet, tails, snoot. They got it all up in here, And so I called to Wayfields, and the sister answered the phone. And I said, hey, is Wayfields us? And she started laughing. She said, no. I think it was holiday time, Thanksgiving or some shit like that, I don't know. I was going to buy from them. I always try to buy from us. I always try to support us. We have to do that. Yeah. Let me go ahead and get ready to, I gave you those two, Bobby Wright. Man, I love Bobby Wright. Got to read that Psychopathic Racial Personality for us again. I think that's vitally important that we understand that, Yeah. Play us a little break, some break music. Yeah. Go to a break here. Mm-hmm. Oh, family, I tell you. So, let us do this, family. All right, here we go.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. That was, excuse me, I tell you, forgot about it. Supposed to try to do something about that. That was Rhythm Jets, Velocity. Rhythm Jets, Velocity. Okay, we're going to get back to the program. I'm talking today about racism, functional definitions of racism that I put together about maybe 20 years ago, probably longer. Here's another one. Dr. Andy Thompson with the Comedic Institute in Chicago. I mean, a good brother with a beautiful spirit, a good bro, good brother. You know, him and all the brothers and sisters at the Comedic Institute, love them. Man, just good brothers and sisters. Baba Jetty, Shimshu Jehudi, Jacob Carruthers, Baba Jetty. Just great people. And this is what his statement. The direct and overall physical and psychological subordination and subjugation of one racial group over another for the purpose of the belief supported by religious doctrine or scientific data that either because of heredity, your genes or family, or cultures, your social environment, the dominant race in power is superior to the dominated and powerless race. Supported by religious doctrine. Religious doctrine. And
Anybody that tries to tell me about Africans and uses the Bible to tell me about African origins or why Africans this, that, and the other is bullshit. I'm telling you right now, I don't even want to entertain it. I don't want to entertain the Noah story. And I used to make fun of it, and deservingly so, you know, how African people got here about Noah building, once he reached land, had a vineyard, got drunk. His other two sons, his son Noah, his son Ham sees him naked because he got drunk. It was hot outside. You know, he sees him naked, tells his brothers don't walk backwards and cover their father's neck with nakedness. When Noah comes up out of that drunken stupor, here's what happened. And then he curses Ham's. Now he doesn't curse Ham direct. He cursed Ham's descendants. He cursed Canaan to be servants unto their brothers. Sounds like, you know, I don't know what the Ethiopian Bible says about this. I don't know what older Bibles say about this. But, you know, the King James Version was a newer Bible. And, of course, deeply into European superiority over everybody, and particularly Africans. You know, and to me, if I can get a story in the Bible that justifies my superiority over you, and you believe it because of what I made you believe in terms of your salvation tied to this, I got your ass. Yeah, religious doctrine. Yeah, scientific data. That was Ernestine and Murray, the bell curve. We have empirical truth of Africans and Shockley. I don't know if you've ever, once again, brothers and sisters, go to YouTube, put in Dr. Francis Crell Swelzing's debate with Shockley on Tony Brown's journal, where she smokes his ass. Because he was definitely pushing forth, because he, even though he wasn't a geneticist, but he was pushing forth the idea that that we are inferior genetically. We are inferior. And it's, and what's deep is that now that we know that we're the first humans on the planet, and nobody has more genetic defects than Europeans. Man. Yeah. The technology that they have. Your genes, your family, your culture, your social environment, your culture is inferior. They came to sit at our feet. They came to sit at our feet to learn all the basic disciplines. And presentation by Dr. Jopp. It's about a half hour long. I'm going to pull that up and maybe play that to you. It is being a brother who is doing the translation. But it's informative. You need to know how great of a mind Dr. Shiganta Jopp was. Even more so than Du Bois, because why? He did it in service for us. Well, Du Bois did too, but his whole thing was initially for the integration. Okay? Dr. Milana Karinga, the creator of Kwanzaa. I shouldn't say that, but he is, but many others, as you will know, as I always do, in a few weeks I bring in a number of people who talk about Kwanzaa and how Kwanzaa was created and spread and things that it was involved in. Because we need Kwanzaa. We need to implement the principles of Kwanzaa. We should instill them into our everyday lives. Umoja, unity. Kujichagulia, self-determination. Ujima, collective working responsibility. Ujamaa, cooperative economics. Nia, purpose. Kumba, creativity. And Imani, faith in our everyday lives. Racism is not an attitude. It is a system. It is a system of defamation, denial, and destruction of a people's history, culture, and right to freedom based primarily on a false concept. And that false concept is race. Europeans devised the concept of race, giving themselves the top position with everyone else at a lower position, with us at the lowest position. They did it. It's an attitude. And Europeans, Caucasians' attitude is so, and you, just, if I didn't have to tell you that, you just saw what happened. You just saw how many people, the millions of people who rejected your ass being a part of what they want and what they created and what they stole. That's why all this talk about immigrants. They came here and stole this. And now I don't want nobody over here but white folks. Just like when Trump said all these shithole countries, why don't you get more people from Holland and Finland and so forth? More Europeans, more Caucasians. It's just like France all up in Africa, and then they want to kick all the Africans that went to France out. All the stuff they stole. Man, I hate the arrogance of these son of a bitches. I really do. It doesn't bring out anything good in me, I'll tell you that. Dr. Francis Cress Welsing. Racism. European, Caucasian, this is, you know, Brother Paul gave me this, and I just added this stuff to it. Said that they're not superior, but they are extreme. They are extreme, no doubt. So I came up with the idea of European Caucasian extremism, racism. Because, see, I had to pull that back in there because they're the ones who created this madness of race and racism. So European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege. They believe that they are privileged in the world. Racism is the local and global power system and dynamic structured and maintained by persons who classify themselves as white, whether consciously or subconsciously determined, which consists of patterns of perception, logic, symbol, formation, thought, speech, action, and emotional response, has conducted simultaneously in all areas of people activity. Economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war. All these areas of people activity. The Urugu has put himself up above all others. For the ultimate purpose of genetic survival, and to prevent genetic annihilation on the planet Earth. It's a real fear, and it's justified. It became even more justified with the pandemic, didn't it? The people who are dying the most were Europeans, Caucasians, older population, more preconditions. A fear of their genetic survival, genetic annihilation. That's what this vote was. Genetic annihilation. A planet upon which the vast majority of people are classified as non-Caucasian, non-European, non-Urugu, non-white. Black, brown, yellow, and so forth, all those other colors, by white-skinned people. And all of the non-people are genetically dominant in terms of skin coloration compared to the genetic recessive Europeans. Dominant, you get dominant. Dominant, recessive, you get dominant. Recessive, you get recessive. So when you see these commercials, brothers and sisters, with these Caucasians, men with sisters, Caucasian women with brothers, the plan is the offspring will be their favor. No, they won't look like them. No, some of them will be decidedly looking African. I mean, you know, I was at a basketball tournament with my grandson. Unfortunately, their team lost. The next game was Carlos Boozer's twin sons. Carlos, and they're going to go to Duke, like he went to Duke, married a Caucasian, you know, and his offspring, you know, they look black. Because they look like high yellow folks. I don't consider myself all like that. I think I'm a little darker. You know, my mama was, that's right. My mama genetically was West African. That's right. Right on, mama. But my father, that's another story. I didn't ever knew my father. But the point I'm making is that some of the offspring, even of light-skinned American Africans and Caucasians, they still, because that gene is dominant. That's what they wanted to do to us. That's what they tried to do to us in various other countries, particularly after the enslavement was over. Argentina is specific. They overtly, they got rid of, that's why in Argentina, you don't see a lot of Africans. They are going to breed them out. So once I mate with an African, and let's say she's dark skinned, that offspring will not even touch a dark skinned person. That offspring will, even though they may look black because they light skinned, but that offspring will deal with a Caucasian. And then that offspring will deal with a Caucasian until finally they have bred the African. That our genetics are strong, so it's there. So if they did a DNA test, it'll still be there. But the appearance is what they want. They don't give a damn what you are inside. It is the appearance. Well, they do give a damn what you're inside, because that's the genetic thing that can still, you know, eliminate them. But still, it's what you look like. Dr. Amos Wilson. European Caucasian extremism, racism, and privilege, white supremacy, whatever form it takes, wherever it exists, must achieve three major goals if it is to socialize Africans into accepting its natural rights of final authority and primary privilege. See, it must do three major things. To socialize Africans into accepting, for us to accept, it's our natural right, their natural rights of final authority, their natural rights and primary privilege. It must establish the human racial idea as Caucasian in contrast to African. It must proclaim that Africans are innately destined to serve Caucasians, and that the fulfillment of their true nature requires their happy commitment to this service. Finally, it requires that Africans be persuaded that they are incomplete without Caucasians, and that their highest calling involves the sacrificing of themselves for the benefit. God, that's a tough one, ain't it, man? I'll read it over again, family. Supremacy, whatever form it takes, wherever it exists, must achieve three major goals if it is to socialize Africans into accepting its natural right, the European's natural right of final authority and primary privilege, their privilege. It must establish the human racial idea has Caucasians, whites, Europeans, Yorugu, in contrast to Africans. It must proclaim that Africans are innately destined to serve Caucasians. We can use that Bible or that religious context for that. Innately destined to serve them. And that the fulfillment of their true nature requires their happy commitment to that service. They tried to do that during our captivity here, that we were happy to serve Caucasians. Images and on movies and so forth, we're all happy, singing, dancing. And that the fulfillment of their true nature requires their happy commitment to this service. Finally, it requires that Africans be persuaded that they are incomplete. We can't do without Mansa. Without Caucasians, and their highest calling involves sacrificing themselves for the benefit. I know. I just want to help you, Mansa. Long as you good, I's good. Oh, man, no wonder I ain't done that in a while. Give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We can talk about that and anything else. I just haven't done it in a while, and boy, man, I tell you, when you understand or overstand, it's deep. My good brother, Irv Lewis, how you doing, my friend? Okay, he's on, but he's off. Yeah, haven't heard from Irv in a while. Yep. Well, he knows what to do. Give us his star twice. His star twice, and you can join the conversation. Yeah. You know, to deal with this subject, a lot of us don't want to deal with it. The pain of it. Understandable that we have been pushed into a position where we accept what they have done to us. And even though if we accept what they have done to us, there's no way out for us. That eternally we will be servants to them. And the way they have made it look, it looks like that, don't it? I know here it's been hundreds of years. Hundreds of years. If we use, let me see here. The amount of time. What is the amount of time, family? Okay, let's try it. Let's try it. Let's see if we can do this. Okay. 245 years of a captivity using 1619 to 1865. Okay. 245 years, okay, of captivity. Then we look at excuse me. $18.65 plus 1965, that would be 100 years. And then 170 years. So we have been in captivity longer here than we have been allegedly free. And that being the case, you can see, and even during the freedom of it, it wasn't real freedom, you know. It was always the hatred of Caucasians and backlash. When the Reconstruction period happened, lasting 10 years, just like affirmative action, lasting 10 years, both of them were met with serious backlash that we were getting something. So finally, you know, that's why ADOS ain't getting nothing. The only way we're going to get something from these folks is that we do it collectively, globally. That we challenge the United States. We challenge all of them that have wronged us, not just Caucasians, Spanish, all the Europeans, the Germans, all of them, for colonization, everything. That's what we do. They have truly disrupted our lives as human beings. All of these were known as crimes against humanity. There is no statute of limitations for crimes against humanity. And so, when we challenge these folks, we're challenging them on what has happened to us. Why don't we have our names? Why don't we have our language? Why don't we have our mores, our ways of doing? Why don't we have our theology? Why don't we have all of these things were all suppressed or stolen from us? Yeah. The ends justified the means as far as Caucasians were concerned. As far as whites were concerned, the ends justifies the means. The means, all the destruction, all of that. The ends, a good environment for them and an environment that we should be happy to be associated with. Yeah. So. Yeah, family. Give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We have a lot of time, a half hour. So any questions or comments that you may have? And, of course, I got a couple people in the queue, but they don't want to hit star twice, I guess. And I don't want to go back to hit it and say, hey. Then they're not there. So, and these are people that know what to do. Yeah. I tell you, family, it's sad. It really is. And I don't know. You know, some people say, you know, you shouldn't be bothered by racism. You know. It's just, it's a natural function. No, it's not. It's not a natural function for human beings. It's something that Yorugu, Europeans, Caucasians, have embraced because their mindset has always been them versus us. You know. You know, when they developed in Greece, this is one of the first civilizations of Europeans. was Greek. And, of course, the Greeks came into Kemet and were awed. They were in awe at what we have done. And I naturally saw. I mean, you look at, because by the time they come into Kemet, it's thousands of years old. Pyramids way. In fact, they were already in the Valley of the Kings and Queens, burying our people, burying each other in the Valley of the Kings and Queens. They weren't even dealing with pyramids. You know? So when they came in, and being the people that we are innately, a giving people, a loving people, we welcomed them. Didn't know that they would eventually come back as conquerors as we allowed them to sit at our feet and learn from us. They would come back to take it and to put their face on it. Those few, that less than 100 or so years that they, you know, they were there for 300 years, I think. I think that's what it was. And, of course, they changed stuff. And of course, you can watch movies about ancient Kemet. The Gods of Egypt is one movie. All the Ten Commandments, all of that. You know. Yeah. It's who they are. It's who they are. And so even today, they had on Facebook, they had this Arab dude on there claiming that Kemet was never African. Just like Azid Awas, the antiquities director for many years, and you've seen him on documentaries, and he always claimed that, no, yes, it is in Africa, but it's not black. Yeah. And that's also, too, they wanted to do the mixed race thing, you know, as opposed to being African. That's, you know, in sub-Saharan, that's that. That's y'all with that. But up here, no. It's, well, understand that all throughout Northern Africa to this present day, it was the Arabs coming out of the east, going westerly, taking from Kemet, Libya, Algeria, Morocco, Mauritania, and so forth and so on. You know. But no. Mm-mm. No. It is African. North, south, east, or west, it is us. I know in my ideas, in my romanticism, I see that future for us. I see Africa reclaiming Africa. I see Africans reclaiming our rightful place on the world stage as players in the world instead of pawns. I see Africa controlling its resources. I see Africa building societies in a way that fit the modern technology of that time to come. I do. No, you know I won't see it. And it may come when I'm about to expire that it ain't even close to it. But I believe that it will. I believe that it will. No. And one of the things we got to get rid of is this religion. Islam, Christianity, Judaism, all of them. One could argue, what about African religions? African has that religion. They have spirituality in various forms. All I'm saying is that we need to not rely on a religion that is outside of ourselves, that is somebody else's religion, that worships somebody else's deity. That's a big mode of contention for us, family. Yeah. Give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Yeah. It's December. Yeah, we're going to have a lot of things going on in December, of course. You know, the holiday season. Now we'll be talking about some of the things we have talked about continuously over these many years during the holiday season. We'll focus in on the importance of Kwanzaa, and we'll talk about that. We'll give out information on the High Holy Days. You know, yeah, to me, you know, a lot of people don't want to know. Because by knowing, that means you have to change your behavior. You have to change how you look at something that you thought you knew, and now that it is not what you have known. And now how do you approach it? How do you deal with it? And so many people don't, I don't want to know that. I'd rather cling to this myth. I'd rather cling to these ideas and these more. I'd rather cling to that than to know the truth. Yeah, I know the truth will set you free. I don't want to be free. I want my mind to be captivated by the fairy tales. I want to believe in that. And that's a problem. Oh, somebody help me out with the conversation here. It's Brother Paul. Brother Paul, good afternoon. How you doing, my friend? Did you have a good weekend?
Absolutely, Baba Ochi. I'm always, every time I get the pleasure of having to wake up another day, I have a good time. You know, right. It's always a good time, you know.
That's right, always.
The bottom line is, yes, it's always a good time, you know. That's the way I prospect life, and
sure,
that's the way I deal with the challenges which come at me every day. You know what I mean? That's it, sure. Brother. So I'm, as long as I get that opportunity to breathe this this concoction of oxygen and whatever else is in the atmosphere.
Yeah.
And I can stay alive. I'm good, brother. Yeah. I'm good.
Me too, brother. As long as I can wake up, man, be conscious. Because sometimes I wake up and I look around myself, around my room, like, wow. Oh, okay. I'm here again.
Yeah, you got another chance to kick it, man. That's
right.
It.
That's beautiful. So,
And to be honest with you, right, Baba Ochi, I really do put that as part of my foundation.
Sure.
That's all we need. That's all we need, man. That's all we need. Because the reality of it is that everything else is what we conceive and what we do. You know, what man does or what woman does. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And just as they can do it, we can do it. You know.
Sure.
You know. Everybody walks their own path, so it's not. I don't, you know, I don't need to look at you. You know, you maybe. One might say, oh, you're doing better than him, or he doing better mm-hmm. than you, or right. whatever. But the reality, as you get older and you reflect, you realize that everybody's got their own path to take.
Sure,
you understand. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, what is sobering sometimes if you go to a funeral and you take a. Well, it's sobering for me when you go to a funeral and you look at some of the gravestones and you see people mm-hmm. born well after you and died
right.
long before you, and it's
right.
that is very sobering for me. You know what I mean? Because
oh, yeah.
sometimes I look at some of the pictures
yeah.
and I think, wow, that man was born well after that person was born well after me, and he died well before me. So you just give thanks, man,
yeah.
and you just try and. Well, you do your best to just try and make a little difference, just try and improve your situation wherever it's at. You know
yep,
what I mean? Try and make wherever you're doing a little bit better. That's it, man. That's it.
And, you know, and I look at it like, you know, I'm over 70 now, man, 72. And I see a lot of times, I thought, oh, wow, that guy's younger than me. I didn't even know that. He looks older than me. Boy, life can be tough. But the bottom
life
line
can be
is.
Tough.
But the bottom line is that it was given to you. What are you going to do with it? What are
Absolutely.
You going to do? You know, and you have every day that you wake up, you have an opportunity to do something. It is yours to choose. And if it's a day that you feel it's nothing for you to do because Maybe you should just stay in the house. Then that's what you do. But if there's a day that you get up and you feel that I gotta make some change. I gotta go to this. I gotta do that. Do it. Don't procrastinate. Don't put stuff off. Be active. Do it. You know?
Yeah, I think you should always try and do something better. I think you should always try and do something better with your health.
Yeah.
You should always try and do something better with yourself. You should always try and do better for someone else. You just try and improve right. The situation. You know what I mean? I mean, you know, sometimes it might be just a bit of advice you give somebody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but whatever it is, you do something to help others. You know?
Yeah.
That's always, to me, that to me, that's how I grew up. That's how I trained myself growing up, helping others. That's how, you know, in fact, you know, one of the things that touches my heart, and I got a picture of my mom, you know, and she died in 07, you know, and but I remember going to the nursing home to pick her up, you know, to take her to church. And she said, here comes my son who tries to help everybody, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, that touched me, man. Here comes my son who tried to help everybody. And that's what I dedicate my life to, man, to a service, you know. So me being a firefighter was apropos. You know, I didn't choose that. It happened, you know. And I had a chance to serve the Milwaukee community, got awards and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, yeah. But the bottom line is, go ahead.
No, sorry, go finish.
No, I said, and the bottom line is I kept, you know, doing service. I've been working with children, going to the schools on my off days, coaching, refereeing, all these kinds of things involved service to others, man. It was always a good thing. I felt good.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, based on what you've just said, it just sounds like you've always been fighting fires and you're still fighting fires now. Not literally, but... Right. Metaphorically, you are fighting fires, you know, all around us, this fire, you know what I mean? And you're still carrying out this role. You're on the radio. I know you help your family, you help your grandson, and you're there. That's it. That's all we've got to do.
Yeah.
And if we all took that attitude, right, for life, we wouldn't have these issues we talk about. We wouldn't. So that's why I say, Baba Ochi, and I know you don't like this saying, but I have to say it. That's why I say some of us, not all of us, are our own worst enemies.
Mm-hmm.
Because look, the reality of it is, I'll put it like this. I don't smoke, and I've never smoked, ever. One of the reasons why I don't smoke, because I can't overstand. I know that you get certain pleasures out of smoking, but to me, I don't understand. I don't think we were born to put smoke in our bodies. You understand?
Uh-huh.
And you as a fireman, you know the dangers of smoke inhalation. You know that. That's going to be part of your training as a fireman, right?
Right.
So to me, it's ludicrous when I it's always never registered with me why do people do this thing. Since I've been, my father don't smoke, my mom don't smoke. Mm-hmm. So that's obviously health. But the reality of it is that as I've got older now, and I look at this smoking thing as self-harming. It's a form of self-harming. That's how I see it. I came to that conclusion in my mind one day. Because you look at a box of cigarettes and it's telling you all the nefarious things it's going to do to you. All the nefarious things going to happen to you. It's written on the box and you still go and buy it. That's a form of self-harm, right?
Oh, no doubt.
And in my mind. So when I look at this thing on a bigger scale, and I look at how many of us are into this thing, and then I look at other forms of self-harm, and we do a lot of self-harming. And that's why I'm talking about sometimes we're our own worst enemy. Because, you know, a great deal of people who participate in that adventure, they know it's harming. They absolutely know the difference.
Sure.
But they will say, oh, well, because this and because that. But so... To me, that's so deep. You're talking about religion, yeah? And this is just my own thoughts and opinions. I ain't saying that I got it 100% right. But these are the things I do a lot of thinking, and I have to come to these conclusions in my mind. So if you take that form of self-harm, if one accepts, one might not accept that self-harming, but if one accepts that self-harming, and you go to religion, right? Look at religion now. Mm-hmm. Now, we know they came in with these things. The Europeans came in with this thing they called the Bible into Africa, mm-hmm. and they imposed that on the African. Even the Quran, the Islam, coming back in the 7th century, yeah? Mm-hmm. They imposed these things on the African. These were not the African concepts. They were imposed on the African. This is fact. This is not me just shooting off my mouth or sharpshooting or whatever one wants to call it. These are historical facts. They were imposed on the African. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So today we continually to regurgitate these things, which are not truths. So if they're not truth, that means they're lies. Mm. Because the opposite of truth is lies. So what I'm saying to you, yeah, you know this thing we call disease. You know what this is just my own thought. All these diseases we have, like they're telling us, black people suffer from the highest amount of this and highest amount of that and all this nonsense, which I don't actually accept is truth. I just think it's propaganda. And we've bought into that propaganda. You know what I mean? They tell black people the highest rate of diabetes, highest rate of this, highest rate of that. No, yes, it's in our community, but per capita, we that's not true, and it's propaganda, and it's a form of propaganda to keep us in position. But the bottom line is, what I'm saying is, after I say that, I'm going to say this too: if you continually lie to yourself, right? If you're continually feeding yourself with hocus pocus and fairy tales and lies, how can that be constructive to your progress? That in itself is a form of self-harm. That is self-harm. If you could, because look, if you go on a lie detector, for instance, and you do a lie detector test, yeah, the reason why they ask you a sense of questions, truth questions, date of birth, your name, your mother's name, your mom's maiden name, your father's name, etc., things which are obviously true. Okay. And then they ask you questions to get the truth. Now, the needle moves when you're not telling the truth. Now, that should tell you there's something, they're detecting some electrical pulse within your body, which your body is now recognizing that you're not telling the truth.
Right.
Now, imagine 24/7, 365, you're lying to yourself. Imagine that. Now, your parents have lied to you when you were a child.
Right.
And then 364, and then you're wondering why you got heart disease, and you wonder why you got all these problems. Because you are the one lying to yourself constantly. Mm. And you've convinced yourself of this nonsense, and others have convinced you of this nonsense, and you're wondering why you're sick as hell. You got to take all these pharmaceutical toxins to keep you alive. Okay? I mean, that may not make sense, but I think it makes sense.
Well, it makes sense. Logical it makes clear to me. Sense, brother. Yeah.
You understand? Yeah. So they're now telling us, which I don't actually accept, that, we're the highest rate of this, you got the highest rate of that and all that bullcrap. Yeah. But the reality of it is, that's part of their attack on us. It's a part of an attack. Just like religion and the way they've got our minds is an attack on us. Mm-hmm. These are attacks on us, but we don't see it as attacks. That's why our guard is down. We take it in and we embrace it. Right. And wonder why we're sick all over the damn place. You can't keep lying to yourself, right? And think you're going to be well. How is that going to be possible? That's not even logically possible. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I know when you talk about these things, you're not talking because you're trying to put down a person or attack a person's nonsense. No, you're talking that because you're trying to whack that person up.
Right.
You understand? And I know we've got to be delicate about this. My own parents are this. We've got to be delicate and respectful. What I'm telling you now, I don't really have these conversations with my parents to that extent because, you know, they're my parents. But the reality of it is I have to live with this pain, knowing that this madness is just, they've infected us with this and we actually accept this is the truth and it's not. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? And we won't let it go. And we wonder why we're in this damn position. They brought something to control your mind and keep you in this position, and you're still practicing it today because you believe.
And you see, Paul,
belief is what's keeping you in that position.
That's why I go back to what you said, we're our own worst enemy. No, the root cause of the problem is white folks, Europeans, Caucasians, Rugu. They are the root cause of the problem. They are the ones that have constantly divided us. They are the ones that give us the illusion of their our inclusion in their system. They are the ones that have said this and that about us, and we have internalized that into the self-hatred that we have towards one another and why we want to beat down one another. It's just like in South Africa. The European caused the South African people under apartheid for so many hundreds of years to behave and act. And of course, the lack of good education. And so then when the country of South Africa wanted some labor, they looked at Africa and they put a call out. Nigerians came, Ghanaians came, others came, and the people in South Africa were angry about it and they attacked them. They attacked these men and women coming to South Africa for these jobs, as opposing to tackling the cracker who have made them deficient and the inability to get these jobs because of the poor educational programs that they have for these people, you see. So constantly, in relations to us, in our situation, the root cause of the problem for us is European, Caucasian, extremism, racism, and privilege. They're not superior. I agree with you, Paul. No. They are not.
But listen, you know what? I was having a conversation with Kwaku the other day, right? And we were talking about Chancellor Williams' work.
Okay, yeah.
And that's very important to me because, okay, we talk about Caucasians, but Chancellor Williams goes beyond Caucasians. You talk about the Asiatics, and what he's referring to, the Asiatics, which he describes as the Arabs today, which he describes as Caucasians, that book.
Yes.
And a great deal of things really, in that work, when I study it, really sink home to me. So what I'm saying is, the point I'm trying to make is, even before the Caucasians, right, you've got the Arabization of the mind.
Mm-hmm.
That was before they came into the issue. So this started before they are.
Right.
So when we talk about the root, right, and he also talks about those who sided with them, and he explains that they were actually, there was many times when they were told not to go down certain lines, and they chose to do it. These were the Africans; they made those choices.
Yeah,
you understand.
Okay.
And we've got those people here today.
Yeah,
well, that same energy, right, are here today. They're among us today.
Yeah.
So, okay, yeah, I have to make a compromise with you. I'm not saying per se we're Roman enemy. We got manipulators, agitators, and the rest of it. But we have to come to an understanding that some of them, the people who look like us,
right, are the problem.
On the planet, we can't keep pretending,
right?
Because
something problem.
Has to
I
be
agree.
Done about it. We can't just say because you're black, oh, you're going to get away. No, because some of our people are treacherous. To the point where it's despicable.
Yes,
and
I agree.
And there has to be something that has to be done. That's the reality of it. And I know I'm talking on these airways, but it's the truth. You can't just keep looking and say, oh, because you're black, okay. No. Because some of these people are disgustingly treacherous.
Yes,
I agree. And it has to be dealt with. It has to be dealt with. If we're going to mature up in this world and take care of business, we need to do something about it as men. Something has to be done.
That's right. That's right. I agree. I agree with that. I do. And I understand that. You know, I understand the treachery to the men and women who have deceived us, the men and women who have connived us in service to, and some just willingly have done it, but in service to those who want to maintain their dominance and control. You know, some don't understand why they do it, but they do it.
We got a leader of the Conservative Party, the New Labour Conservative Party. Her name is Kemi Badenoch or something like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
See, she's. I think she's born in the UK, but she grew up in Nigeria. She's of Nigerian descent. Yeah.
Oh, right. Okay.
She's the new leader of the Labour Party, and this woman says that reparations is a scam. That's why she made a public statement and says, "Can you hear the treachery of this? This is an African woman from the continent, you know, born in the UK, reparations is a scam to serve her puppet masters. This is the treachery of this woman. You understand? And talking, we don't need to talk about Black history. This is what I'm saying, the treachery of these people. Wow. This is an African woman, Black woman, the treachery of these people. Yeah. We can't keep pretending that it's not.
Right.
Something has to be done. We can't just keep, because you're this and that, because you're... No! Because these people are disgustingly treacherous.
Mm-hmm.
She's not even frightened to say it. She says it in public, yeah? Leader of the Labour Party. Yeah. Leader of the Conservative Party. That's what she says. I mean,
she's a leader of which party? Mean? She's a leader of the Conservative Party?
The Conservative Party. Yeah, she's the leader of the Conservative Party at the moment.
Yeah, I can see
Kemi Badenoch, her name is. This is the treachery of these people. You know?
Mm-hmm.
You sit back and say, wow, you know what I mean? And they just seem like they can get away with it. They think they're so brave. You know, and they're all over the place. The energy is all over the place.
They are, man. Treacherous,
you know,
we have to
sit down and decide among ourselves what needs to be done about it.
Wow.
Because it's ridiculous.
Well, you know what I like to see done is that we were in a position to punish treachery, punish our treasonous individuals, punish those who have done things to harm us as a people, not just the Caucasians who we know what they've done, but those who are inside of us who have the ability to do that even more deeply because they can put a smile and face and we think they all cool. But next thing we know, we are in a bad situation because of them, because of their treachery and their deceitfulness, you know.
Too much of it's going on. Too much of these so-called misleaders in these positions. And the treachery is just phenomenal and they're so brave of it. Because they know they're protected, and to a certain extent, because they know that when there's no repercussions for them. You know what I mean? Then we just come back and smile with them, pretending like it's just a horrible state of affairs, which we really need to deal with, to discuss how we're going to go forward. Because how can you go forward with these people who look like you, who are just selling you out all the time and just so comfortable with doing it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Ridiculous.
Well, I got a picture. I just, since you said that, I got to see who this person is. Kemi Badenoch. Yeah, the current holder of the position who was elected. She was elected just back in November, same as Trump. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the Conservative Party.
It escapes me, and I was thinking about it. You've got to remind me. You've got to... there's something you were discussing on your program and in America to do with discussing of Black history, and you got a term for it, and I can't remember the term you were using.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you know it, and I don't expect you to get it off your head, but I know. But it's a term you were using and when you were discussing African American history there, yeah? Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now, she, most people don't know that term in the UK. It's not something we're that familiar with.
Okay.
But before even that, she made a statement when she was bidding for leadership. She made a statement saying, oh, we don't want none of that Americanism in the UK. We don't need none of that type of language and all this sort of stuff, yeah? And I'm thinking to myself, no one even really, unless you're in the conscious community, you don't really understand them terms. But she is, that's how far she's willing to sell people down the line to please her paymasters. You know, these are the kind of people, you know, they put up front.
Yep, unfortunate model globally where dark-skinned people are, and you have those traitors that do that sell us out, and
absolutely,
the language that they use and the whole idea to maintain and sustain the privilege that Caucasians have established for themselves. They use these individuals, these dark-skinned individuals, you know, and then when people like her who have come out openly and said just despicable things about her own people, you know, about African people, to placate to Caucasians, is sad and sickening. So yeah, man.
Secondly, yeah, man. Well, you know what? Thank you for providing, giving me an opportunity to speak.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you for doing what you're doing, Bob. Keep up the good work and keep the fire burning. Thank you.
Always, Brother Paul. Thank you so much, man. Have a blessed day, man. Peace to you.
You too.
All right. Yeah, Conservative Party. She's the Kemi Badenoch. Yeah. It's a damn shame. But we have that, brothers and sisters. It is a part and parcel of the idea of racism, white supremacy. It is a what? Global phenomenon. And there's plenty of Negroes and all kind of folks like that that help maintain and sustain that position that Caucasians have put themselves in at the expense of everybody else, particularly at our expense. Sad. And to me, they need to be called out. Now, if I had an opportunity, they need their ass whooped. But, hey, yeah. All right, brothers and sisters. We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind, but not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources everybody wants, think they can't do it out, and they sure in the hell don't want to pay for it. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Esante Sana means thank you. A bibi for Hardier means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. Have a blessed and wonderful day. Hope to see you on Wednesday. Peace.